embryos. Let me repeat. Human beings in their embryonic stage will be destroyed if, in fact, they exhibit mere risks for these diseases.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, you remember about a year ago, we interviewed Tony Robinson on the problems with in vitro fertilization. And he shared with us an alternative approach many people have never heard of called NAPRO technology. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So today we don't just have someone familiar with the topic, Doug. We have an expert connected with the original institute behind this technology, which means we're going right to the source. I'd like to welcome to the program the director of the Center for NAPRO Ethics at St. Paul the Sixth Institute in Omaha, Sister Renee Merkus. Welcome to Real Science Radio, Sister Renee.
Well, thanks for having me, Fred and Doug. This is a real privilege to be able to share the ethics and medicine of NAPRO technology with your listeners. So thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Yes, of course, of course. Thanks for joining us for what we believe is a very important topic for our listeners. Sister Renee is a member of the Franciscan Sisters of Christian Charity. She holds graduate degrees in music and moral theology, along with a doctorate in theological ethics from Marquette University. Over the past several decades, she has become a leading interpreter of Catholic teaching on procreation, reproductive technologies, and the ethics of women's health. Her writing has appeared in major journals, and she is widely sought after for her clarity, compassion, and ability to translate complex ethical issues into language that serves couples, clinicians, and clergy. Whether she's consulting with physicians, accompanying couples through difficult moral decisions, or engaging in national conversations on emerging technologies, Sister Renee brings a rare combination of scholarship, clinical understanding, and personal compassion to one of the most sensitive areas of modern medicine. Sister Renee, we're thrilled to have you on. Please tell us more about the science of NAPRO technology, and in particular, its distinctive approach to reproductive and infertility treatment.
Before we dig in, it's important to say that the exploration of the science and ethics of NAPRO technology, just being honest here, is going to require a lot of brain power. Now, that power comes from synapses within our brains. Did you know that there are serious neurological studies out there that have shown you actually can increase the synapses within your brain with a giggle, a chuckle, and a belly laugh for sure. Well, let's see if these internet memes get a chuckle out of you with increased synapses as a bonus. Here's that pleading look on this little squirrel looking up at the human, looking up down at the squirrel from the window, in effect saying, "I'm sorry to bother you, but the bird feeder is empty." Oh, that's just so cute. What about this one called the generation gap? There's a son and a dad sitting next to each other with reverse hairstyles. By that, I mean the son has his hair on top of his head, little hair below, while the dad has bald on top of his head with the hair below. So they're just the reverse. The hairstyles are in reverse only due to age. It's the generation gap. Or this phrase from the internet, be decisive. right or wrong, make a decision. The road of life is paved with flat squirrels who could not make a decision. Now, Fred and Doug, with those synapses snapping, I think we're ready for our first question.
All right, sure. So could you explain what NAPRO Technology is and where it's headquartered?
Absolutely. NAPRO Technology is an acronym for Natural Procreative Technology. We call it NAPRO for short. It's a dynamic, versatile women's health science that allows any woman to unleash the power that naturally exists within her cycle. It monitors and maintains a woman's gynecologic and reproductive health. And you know what? I am not exaggerating when I say women love NAPRO for a whole host of reasons. First, it provides knowledge about the patient's body, how her body is working. Second, it increases awareness of abnormalities that might pop up in the woman's menstrual and fertility cycles. Third, and very importantly, NAPRO helps the physician understand the causes or roots of a woman's health problems, inviting her to be a collaborator with him or her in her healthcare maintenance. In short, NAPRO provides women real solutions to real problems, whether we're talking about menstrual cramps, PMS, ovarian cysts, irregular bleeding, polycystic ovarian disease, repetitive miscarriages, postpartum depression, hormonal abnormalities, or the issue we're highlighting today, infertility. And my dear friends, NAPRO does all of this by providing moral options for the anti-woman procedures of mainstream OBGYN. Think about this. Instead of contraception and sterilization, NAPRO offers the natural system of family planning called the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. Instead of abortion, NAPRO helps couples appreciate the beauty and the singular gift of every new human life. Viewing a baby as the perfection of marriage, the perfection of family, and the perfection of society. And on the topic of today's interview, instead of the moral negativity of in vitro fertilization, NAPRO has developed a whole alternative system of solutions for infertility that respect, not negate, respect the full truth of procreation and marital sex. Now, in answer to the second part of your question, NAPRO is headquartered in Omaha, Nebraska, at the St. Paul VI Institute. Thanks to 43 years of training NAPRO physicians and teachers, we now have ancillary clinics throughout the United States and around the world. This man, Dr. Thomas W. Hilgers, founder and director of the Institute, likes to joke that NAPRO is on every continent except Antarctica, and he doesn't think the penguins need our reproductive help. But seriously, Hilgers is a man who, like every human being, has had to decide what it is that gives ultimate meaning to his life and is the font from which all his actions flow. And for Dr. T.W. Hilgers, besides God, that's the development of women's healthcare that conforms to God's plan for human procreation. A plan that conforms to reason and, as a result, is a plan unabashedly person, woman, family, and society friendly.
All right. Well, amen to that. Now, I know we want to contrast IVF with NAPRO's approach to infertility for our audience. And in order to do that, can you first walk us through what in vitro fertilization is and what the procedure involves?
Absolutely. Now, Doug, this is going to take a while, but I invite you and all your listeners to stay with me. Since we cannot assess the ethical dimensions of IVF without knowing what's involved in the procedure itself. In vitro fertilization is the production of a new human being in a petri dish, listen, in a laboratory, apart from the intimacy of its parents' marital act and apart from conception in its mother's body. There are five steps, or what we could call procedural phases, of the in vitro procedure. The first step is ovarian stimulation. The female patient takes injectable hormone medications to encourage the entire group of that cycle's eggs to mature simultaneously and fully. Now, what this means is, instead of having just one egg, as in a natural cycle, the patient, the woman, may have many eggs. The patient's response to the medications is monitored both by ultrasound and by blood hormone levels. When the patient's eggs are ready for final maturation, a trigger shot is given to finalize that process before egg retrieval. We should note that this step is not without its health risks and its ethics. Ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome could result in possible rupture of the woman's fallopian tubes and then related risks to her maternal health and life. The second step of IVF is egg retrieval and sperm collection. The healthcare provider uses ultrasound, and that's just because they want to guide a thin needle through the patient's vagina into each of her ovaries. That needle is connected to a suction device, which is used to pull the egg out of each follicle. The eggs are then placed in an incubator. To collect the man's sperm, the patient's husband or partner retrieves sperm by penile stimulation. The semen are taken to the lab, washed, spun down, made rich before fertilizing the woman's eggs. And that brings us to the third step of IVF, which is fertilization itself. The afternoon after egg retrieval, the embryologist tries to fertilize all mature eggs using intracytoplasmic sperm injection, or ICSI. Now, that's a big term. Don't let it scare you. All that means is each sperm will be injected into each mature egg to bring about fertilization. On average, 70% of mature eggs will be fertilized. So, for example, in any one cycle of IVF, if 10 mature eggs are retrieved, about 7 will fertilize. And if successful, listen carefully, the fertilized egg is the first cell stage of a human embryo. Or, as I like to think of it, the first cell stage of a human being at its embryonic stage. The fourth step of IVF is the culturing of the embryo, or embryo development. The development of the embryos is carefully monitored with time-lapse incubators with built-in cameras that take pictures of the embryo every few minutes. Embryologists can see the embryo's development over time, from that moment of fertilization through key stages of growth. Usually, 50% of embryos fail to develop, and they are discarded. The patient may also opt for monogenic and polygenic screening with the destruction of any of the human embryos who do not pass these genetic screenings. The patient may also opt for designer features like eye and hair color, height, athleticism, intelligence, gender. ORCID, an IVF center in Dubai, Qatar, labels itself, quote, as the world's most advanced whole genome screening for embryos during IVF, end of quote. ORCID uses AI-generated polygenic embryo testing. So parents who opt to use this testing get an extensive analysis of their baby's risk for a variety of health conditions, including, but not limited to, autism, severe obesity, Alzheimer's, inflammatory bowel disease, schizophrenia, diabetes, and breast cancer. Understood, but not always stated. Embryos. Let me repeat. Human beings in their embryonic stage will be destroyed if, in fact, they exhibit mere risks for these diseases. So couples, think about this. Contemplating IVF could destroy their embryonic baby if it's at risk for something as manageable as severe obesity. The fifth procedure or phase of IVF is embryo transfer. How do we get the embryonic baby from that incubator to the mother's uterus? Well, there are two kinds of embryo transfer, fresh and frozen. Now, that sounds like a fast food drive-thru, doesn't it? Oh, it's very off-putting. A fresh embryo transfer means the embryo is inserted into the patient's uterus between 3 and 7 days after the egg retrieval procedure. Because this embryo hasn't been frozen, we call it fresh embryo transfer. But a frozen embryo transfer means that frozen human embryos from a previous IVF cycle are thawed and inserted into the patient's uterus. This is a more common practice because frozen embryo transfer, kind of counterintuitively, has proven more likely to result in a live birth than the fresh transfer. The last and possibly non-occurring step of IVF is pregnancy. The healthcare provider will use a blood test to determine if the patient is pregnant approximately 9 to 14 days after embryo transfer. Now, success rates for IVF are very difficult to generalize, since the rate of pregnancy depends on the individual woman's health, morbidity, that is, what diseases she has, and most importantly, on her age. Usually, the generalized rate of pregnancy with IVF is 25 to 30%. But remember, that means IVF fails to get a woman pregnant 70 to 75% of the time. Well, Fred and Doug, have I answered the question, the second question, to your satisfaction?
Well, you certainly have, Sister Renee, and thank you. This was both interesting and eye-opening. Now, could you also speak to the morality of infertility treatments?
Of course. The Roman Catholic Church's teaching on the morality of infertility treatments is not, underline not, some private truth for Catholics only. This teaching is based on natural law, the law of human nature, the law of reason, which means the truth of this teaching is truth for anybody, Catholics or not, anybody who has the ability to reason and can recognize reasonable directives when they see or hear them. Donum vitae, two Latin words meaning the gift of life, the title of an instruction from the Vatican on infertility treatments, teaches that an infertility procedure could be morally good if it assists the act of marital sex to achieve pregnancy. While a procedure like IVF that we've just discussed replaces the sexual act and therefore is immoral. So, my dear friends, here's what the church is saying. The only context worthy of the conception of a new human being is within the act of marriage, that reciprocal self-giving act of its parents. Therefore, the church insists the central moral deficit of IVF, the central moral deficit of IVF lies in the fact that it replaces rather than assists the act of marital love in achieving a pregnancy. With IVF, the husband and wife produce a baby in a sterile lab instead of within that intimate, reciprocal, self-giving act of sexual love. As a result, IVF deprives the newly produced IVF baby of the intimacy of its parents' act of love, as well as excludes the baby's conception from within his mother's body. Now, I kind of get the sense that some of you at this point might be thinking, well, really, what's so bad about that? To appreciate the moral wrong of producing new human life, a baby, in a lab, rather than conceiving that baby within the act of marital intercourse, we need to step back. To step back, my dear friends, and take a look at the relationship of love and life in God. God's creative love, by its very nature, is altruistic. God's love just has to go out of itself. God's love has to be shared in giving life to others. Now that pattern, a love that is at once life-giving, becomes the model for all human love, and most specifically for marital love, as it procreates a new human being. Just as God's love reaches its perfection in giving life, so must married love. New human life, the conception of a baby, a new human being, only makes sense within the context of a loving act of marital sex. The only setting respecting the dignity of human conception, the dignity of the baby, the dignity of the parents, is that act of marital sex, the intimate act of reciprocal self-giving love between husband and wife. That setting, and that setting alone, defines every baby as a gift rather than as a product, a somebody rather than a something, as an IVF. The child is not, nor ought never be, a showcase for its parents' personality or preferences, but a blessing from God. A blessing from God, a child who deserves love and a chance to grow up regardless of its risk or irritable bowel syndrome or obesity or any other disease. A new human being must be recognized as a good, a blessing, a gift, independently of the desires of his or her parents and independently of any parental design. To use God the Creator's declaration in the book of Genesis, the existence of every newly conceived baby is and must be seen as very good, as a very good gift, to be loved just as they are, just because they exist. In contrast, IVF parents make the life of their child depend on their desires, on their will, and therefore on their power to make or invent the lab simulation of the biological aspect of human conception misleads the IVF parents into thinking they own their baby, creating a relationship, my dear friends, between parents and the baby that's riddled with gross inequity. The IVF child could think and, in effect, say to his parents, I came to be only on the condition that your desires for a baby would be satisfied. That same child, once he is old enough to reflect on his beginnings, might also think, I exist to vicariously fulfill my parents' hopes and dreams. But this sort of existential dependence would contradict the child's fundamental equality with his parents and with all other human beings. That's why, based on natural law, the law of human nature that's perfected by faith, the Roman Catholic Church teaches that any reproductive technology that assists rather than replaces the conjugal act could be morally acceptable. And my dear listeners, here's the good news. NAPRO infertility procedures, which we're going to be discussing in more detail in just a moment, unequivocally assist the act of marital love to achieve its natural goal of pregnancy. And therefore, NAPRO infertility procedures are a morally good example of assisted reproductive technology. Now, back to IVF. Besides that central ethical problem with IVF, that it replaces rather than assists the conjugal act, there are quite a few secondary evils, and I just want to point them out to you because we're trying to contrast IVF with the goodness of NAPRO. First, creating spare embryos, guaranteeing enough embryos to transfer to the mother's uterus after pre-implantation testing, when some of those embryos will be destroyed. All of that means that if one or more of those human beings in their embryonic stage fail to meet the selective screening criteria, they will be destroyed. Second, the cryopreservation of freezing of embryos condemns the IVF baby to surrealistic suspension in liquid nitrogen. I'm going to repeat that because it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up straight. Cryopreservation, or freezing of human embryos, condemns that IVF baby to a surrealistic suspension in liquid nitrogen until further directives come from either the parents or from IVF cryopreservation units to let them thaw. And then there's the question of donor egg or sperm. For couples who either do not produce their own gametes or whose gametes are subject to abnormalities that are inimical to normal conception. That's a whole nother secondary evil, the donor egg or the donor sperm. Why? Because this practice, donor egg, donor sperm, destroys the marital unity of the couple who are trying to conceive. By introducing an egg or sperm from someone outside their union and produces babies who are not entirely genetically related to their rearing mother and dad. Another ancillary evil of IVF is the option of hiring a surrogate mother. Surrogacy is commonly, currently, a common option offered by many IVF clinics. This practice is not only an injustice against that surrogate mother, but also denies the baby of its right, I underscore right, R-I-G-H-T, to be conceived, gestated, and born into a marriage of its rearing parents. Another possible ancillary evil of IVF is the production of a baby designed by its parents with the options of choosing the baby's gender, hair color, eye color, height, intelligence, or athleticism. And also the chance to screen a baby so it will not be plagued by common genetic diseases. My dear friends, my question to you is, what do you think the moral fallout from all of this parental dictation of characteristics for their baby is? Do you agree with me that these evils change the baby from a human being to be accepted as they are into a product, a thing, an object whose dignity is trivialized and disregarded by clinical and parental design, implying that having a baby is a right, R-I-G-H-T, a right, something to be had on demand and designed by parental choice?
Wow, that is powerful information. And now I'd like to tackle the important question that I know is near and dear to your heart, Sister Renee. What is the NAPRO technology approach to infertility, and what makes it morally good?
Yes, right. This is near and dear to my heart. The entire NAPRO treatment program for infertility is built around the Creighton Model Fertility Care System, a system of charting for the menstrual and ovulatory cycles. That charting system is important for the initial evaluation of a couple's fertility potential, for the timing of blood tests, and to monitor the woman's response to treatment cycle by cycle. The beneficial effects of medical and surgical NAPRO treatments can actually be seen on that chart as it changes from an abnormal to a normal pattern. Thus, when functional reproductive abnormalities are causing infertility, things like ovarian hormone deficiency or ovulatory defects, they might be corrected with medical treatments only. Infertility, however, grounded in structural defects such as endometriosis, PCOS, pelvic inflammatory disease, uterine fibroids, or uterine septum, might necessitate specially designed NAPRO surgical interventions. Also, if stress is an issue, the beneficial effects of counseling and stress management can be seen from improved charting patterns. So, NAPRO's infertility protocols embody the small C Catholic universally true realities that Vatican teachings proclaim, all the while avoiding the following deficits of IVF. First, natural procreative technology infertility protocols assist, not replace, the marital act of love. Second, they promote the unitive love meaning of that marital act of sex that's not only inextricably linked to, but that alone makes sense of the mystery of sexuality, the mystery of human procreation. Third, NAPRO infertility protocols recognize the child's right to be conceived, gestated, born into, and raised within a heterosexual until death do we part marriage. Fourth, they respect the inviolable integrity and the right to life of a newly developing baby. Fifth, NAPRO infertility protocols acknowledge the truth that parents ought to view their baby as a gift, not a right. In sum, NAPRO's infertility protocols provide a couple struggling with infertility the moral, medical, and surgical solutions that IVF procedures simply do not and cannot provide. They justly respect and recognize the child as someone equal in personal dignity to them, because the sexual act of unitive love is the only reproductive context in which parents are able to welcome and love their child as someone whose mere existence is already in and of itself a good. In closing, my dear friends, I've included my email address in case anyone listening would like to email questions or comments on what I've presented today, especially for referrals to our St. Paul the Sixth Institute clinicians for NAPRO infertility care. God bless you all, and thanks, Fred and Doug, for this opportunity.
Well, yes, peace. Thank you. Thank you, Sister Renee. And I saw your email. If you could go back to that really quickly, because I do want to ask, where can a couple inquire? Can they inquire locally? Do they have to go to Omaha? How can our audience find out more about NAPRO technology? And for our radio listeners, I just want to let you know the email address directly to Sister Renee is ethics@popepaulvi.com. That's Pope Paul VI, right? ethics@popepaulvi.com.
Great. I found it. It's fertilitycare.org. If you just Google that, if you're someone out there who would like to find a NAPRO or a Creighton Model Fertility Care Center near you, that website will give you the opportunity to put in your zip code and we'll locate for you the closest fertility care center. And from there, you can call the number listed and, you know, pose your questions and establish the contact. Or you can email me and we can use the central data system here at the St. Paul the Sixth Institute, fertilitycare.org. We'll alert you to the nearest NAPRO center or Creighton Model Fertility Care Center. And from there, you can go on and reach whatever information you want from the persons who direct that center.
Okay, so that's fertilitycare.org, and we've got that on the screen. So again, fertilitycare.org. And I did have one quick question, Sister Renee. So I recall that the success rate of IVF was only 25 to 30%. Do we have numbers on the success rate of NAPRO technology?
Yes, there are. There are some published articles. I'm sorry to say I don't have the title of those articles on hand, but this is what I remember reading from Dr. Hilger's textbook, that we are 1.5 to 2 times more successful than IVF. But you'd have to go to his textbook, which is the Medical and Surgical Practice of NAPRO Technology, for that information.
Yeah, and just I have a little personal experience with this, Sister Renee, as I have recommended NAPRO technology to a couple that I met, and I went to Google. I found a local clinic in Denver, Colorado, and I found easily links to the peer-reviewed articles that lay out the success rates, which are very well clinically documented. And so I appreciate you helping us. That's fertilitycare.org, but Google does a pretty good job. They did for me anyways. And so just we appreciate you coming on, Sister Renee, and letting our audience know about moral alternatives to in vitro fertilization. Can't thank you enough. We so much appreciate it.
You're very welcome. God bless you.
God bless you, Sister Renee. So for Sister Renee and my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.